All right, we are good to go. Thank you.
Hey, good evening. I'd like to call the Wednesday, September 22nd meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order. May we get a roll call, please?
Yes, Director Villa.
Here.
Director Replogle.
Here.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Here.
Vice President White, and then President Austin.
Here.
And then Director Gibson is working on it. Thank you.
All right, let's start through the flag salute, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Agenda review. Is there anything anyone wants to change or move on the agenda? Seeing nothing, we will go ahead and
make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right, agenda approved. That brings us now to public comment. This is public comment for items that are not on tonight's agenda. Carrie.
Yes, and just to remind the public, if you're on your phone, please hit *9 to raise your hand. And if you're on your computer or tablet, please hit the raise hand button at the bottom of the screen. And I have one hand raised, and I'm going to unmute Jeff Edwards.
Thank you, Madam President, board members. Good evening. My name is Jeff Edwards. It's nice to see Mr. Minery back. Unfortunately, I have some bad news for your board. Once again, you're being played by Pismo Beach, you and your community. On September 7th of this year, the city of Pismo Beach filed another grant application for Central Coast Blue. This is a round 3 concept proposal for Prop 1 Groundwater Sustainability Grant Program. That's what the Department of Water Resources. And they've applied for a $28 million grant from DWR. The unfortunate part is that they're still using Oceano to secure additional funding. As you know, they've obtained or been granted around $5 million in grants, and they've used Oceano's disadvantaged community status to assist in those grants, obtaining them. Well, now the numbers are a lot bigger, $28 million. And this is their rationale under match reduction. They're getting a 5% match reduction because of your disadvantaged status. Central Coast Blue, and I'm quoting from their application, Central Coast Blue will protect NCMA groundwater supplies from seawater intrusion, of which Oceano CSD is entitled to 900 acre feet per year, representing 21% of the NCMA groundwater entitlements. Match reduction is based on a 20% match for the components of the project that benefit Oceano CSD as a severe disadvantaged community, resulting in a 5% reduction to the match requirement. Now, the math is a little fuzzy, but the best I've been able to determine, they're getting a benefit of anywhere between $2.6 million and $5.2 million because of you and your community. Now, I'm sure they're going to cut you a check for your part of it. Not. So, I don't know when your district is going to recognize that they are using you. They're using you without your authorization. You've written letters in the past. I believe Ms. Austin has written a letter on her own, ostensibly representing the board, supporting the project. But, how long are you going to go before you call Pismo Beach on the situation? They are using you and your community. So it's kind of pathetic, to be honest. And as a board, I would think that you're supporting and working for your community, and it just doesn't seem to be the case. So my suggestion in closing is that you look into this application and that you make the grant providers, in this case, the state of California, aware of the situation, because they are misrepresenting the facts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'll correct one of the statements that Linda Austin wrote a letter on her own. That's not true. Is there any other public comment?
And with that, President Austin, that was the only hand I had raised.
All right. Thank you very much. Now we'll come down to special presentations and reports. We'll start with our staff report, Sheriff South Station Commander Jay Wells.
I don't believe Commander Wells is with us this evening.
You say he's not with us?
No.
Okay. And is Chief Lieberman going to wait until the report on business items? Or did you want to give a report now, Chief Lieberman? Or?
I think I'll hold off until the agenda item. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Then that brings us to our operations. Tony Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility Systems Manager. So Lopez is currently at 31.2% full, which is 15,418 acre feet. We're continuing to do our daily, weekly, monthly rounds. We had 12 work orders, 8 USAs, 6 customer service calls, 1 after hours call out, and that was due to the community systems irrigation line broke, and we got a call out about 11:30 at night. We did notify the community center that the irrigation was broke. We had a unscheduled power outage at the lift station, which we took the emergency generator and everything went smoothly. We finished cleaning all the lateral hotspots. We continued to sewer jet. We had meter reads in the past couple weeks. We're still picking up trash. We had the re-reads for high consumption and leak notifications. Customers regarding meter reads. We had a little bit more dead end flushing, and currently one of our employees, Doug, is at a class obtaining his Class A license. Any questions?
Wonderful. Thank you, Tony. Is there any questions for Mr. Maricino?
Thank you.
Doesn't look like it. Thanks, Tony. Will Clemens, General Manager, do you have any reports?
Fairly briefly. So regarding solid waste issues, you probably heard the county formally approved withdrawing from the IWMA, and I believe the effective date of that will be mid-November. So along those lines, we recently met with South County Sanitation to discuss our franchise agreement amendment that they're currently working on with all the South, you know, basically all the South County agencies and the city of San Luis Obispo. So we're trying to coordinate that franchise amendment. This will also require a rate increase process for garbage in all those communities, including Oceano. They're trying to get that rate application in early October. Their hope is to have it in place by the end of this calendar year, but I think that's a very aggressive schedule. I'm not sure they'll be able to meet it. So we'll see how that plays out, but certainly, we are going to need to have a rate increase Prop 218 process in Oceano, along with the cities are going to be doing the same thing. They've hired Bill Statler to review the rate application on behalf of all the South County agencies, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and ourselves. And I think that's it. Regarding solid waste, I also met with the city managers of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach to discuss the staffing issues that we're going to discuss later on in the agenda. And you probably also heard that the city of Arroyo Grande authorized its city manager to negotiate a cost-sharing agreement and JPA for operation of the Central Coast Blue project. However, they also left the door open for discussions with OCSD regarding, perhaps a water supply agreement. So they are dusting off a water supply alternative study that was done in 2004. MKN is doing that. And so I'll be meeting with MKN and Arroyo Grande soon to discuss what we might be able to work out for short term as well as long term agreements, so that they can include those in their study if they so desire. And then finally, multiple staff volunteered Saturday at the Five Cities Homeless Coalition Empty Bowls fundraiser. So that's always a good annual fundraiser for that organization. And I think it went really well. So with that is my report.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Clemens. Does anyone have any questions or for Mr. Clemens' comments?
I do. I have one comment. I heard during that meeting that they kept on saying that there was a seawater intrusion, that the study was conclusive that there was seawater intrusion. That's not the case, right? I remember it was inconclusive in Oceano.
That's subject of debate. I think this board took a position that there wasn't necessarily seawater intrusion back in 2012. However, regardless, the project does protect against that threat. And certainly seawater intrusion is a threat anywhere along the coast of California.
Okay.
But so far, all the agencies have really worked good together to reduce pumping so that that threat has been mitigated since those high levels were detected back in 2009.
Okay. Any other questions, Director Villa?
No.
All righty. Well, thank you to the staff for helping out at the Empty Bowls. That's a great fundraiser for the Homeless Coalition. So I'm glad to hear that you guys did that. Anyone else want to, anything for? Okay, then we'll move on to our Board of Directors reports. And we'll start out with Director Villa.
Yes, the Oceano Advisory Council met on the 9th and the 16th. And basically from these two meetings, we approved and sent out two letters. One of the letters is, these letters are on your addendum and on this agenda packet. So 6BI, one of the letters is to the county, state parks, and our supervisor. And it's basically stating that we need to have more adequate parking before on Pier Avenue, because before we know it, July of 22 is around the corner and it's gonna be closed off to vehicle access to the beach. So we would like it to be a little bit more pedestrian friendly, a little bit more, there's not adequate handicap parking, sidewalks aren't adequate either. So we would like to see that, and we would like to start talks with State Parks, County, and our supervisor about it, Public Works. The second letter was a funding request, and this funding request was due to the fact that we're operating with donations, and we weren't set up to operate with donations. So we still haven't, our supervisor still hasn't said that she is going to fund us or even put the budget on the agenda. So it's difficult for us to operate because, as we all know, everybody needs money to operate. We just want some money so that we can cover administrative costs. So we decided to write a letter to all the supervisors and send the letter out to each individual supervisor, asking them to please reach into their discretionary funds. Every supervisor has discretionary funds that they can support programs with, and reach into it for $500. That's not asking much. And so hopefully we'll get at least three supervisors agreeing to give us $500, and we'll have for administrative costs. And that's about it. On September 14th, I did participate or listened into the Aurora Grande meeting there. And I was very pleased to hear so much talk about Oceano. I was a little confused about the wells. I'm like, I remember Pavel saying that it was inconclusive, but I was just, that's why I asked that question. But I was very pleased because they mentioned they're open to talks. They're going to participate at Central Coast Blue, but not to the same percentage. I believe they're thinking about 25%. And so they need other alternatives, and they're considering working with Oceano and maybe even get some funds for infrastructure. That would be cool. That's about it.
All right, thank you.
I have a question for Director Villa. And it's kind of awkward because the OCSD has nothing to do with Pear Avenue. And if you're asking for funds from the supervisor, we have nothing to do with any of what you're mentioning, okay? And in your addendum, you're talking about the two committees and who's getting money and who's not. And I don't see the other people that are on the committees. Vice President White is on both committees, and President Austin is on the Vitality Group. And I don't want the OCSD as seen as being, supporting one group over the other. And neither group has anything to do with OCSD.
No, my report is on the Oceano Advisory Council.
Right, but how does that affect us?
I'm just reporting because I'm the person that reports from the Oceano Advisory Council to the OCSD. So I'm reporting about what the Oceano Advisory Council has been working on.
Well, maybe instead of all of that other Pier Avenue and then funding from the supervisor, maybe just limit it to things that actually affect the OCSD.
Okay.
I'm interested in hearing the full report.
I'm not reporting about OCSD. I'm reporting about the Oceano Advisory Council. I'm the representative from the Oceano Advisory
Council. I understand that. But if there's nothing relevant to the OCSD, then it's not really relevant to us. Right?
Okay. I think to all of Oceano.
Well, true, but
all right, let's call it here and move on.
We are a district and we provide services, that's all.
Okay, thank you, Director Gibson, Director Villa. Let's see, let's go down to Director Gibson, do you have any reports?
Yes, I do. So on September 15th, I attended the San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And basically we did a quarterly update on the redundancy project. And one interesting thing was that they are scheduled for completion on August 1st, 2023. And at this point, they say they'll be 13 days over that deadline, which is interesting that they can project that far in advance. And then they have $3.1 million in contingency funds for unforeseen costs. And at this point, they've only had one contract change order, and that was
only in the amount of $16,000, and that was to relocate a broken water line service. So they're progressing very well, and I guess that's about it.
Okay, thank you.
And then on September 16th, I had a Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, and mainly we talked about the fourth quarter budget. And then the only semi-action was that we sent a letter to the North American Weather Consultants to cloud seed again this winter, and not to exceed $285,000. And it could potentially add 3,000 to 6,000 acre feet of water to the Lopez Lake Reservoir.
That's good news.
Okay, I'm done.
Thank you. Director Repluggo?
Nothing.
Okay, and let's see, Vice President White then.
I think our action will be covered in the reports later, so I don't need to be
redundant. Very good. Okay, is there any public comment on the special presentation and reports?
And just to remind the public, please hit *9 if you're on your phone, and if you're on your computer or tablet, please hit the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen. And I have two hands raised, and I'm going to unmute Charles Varney.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Good evening. I just wanted to comment on Director Gibson's notion that the OAC has nothing to do with OCSD or vice versa. If you review reports and plans that have been generated by OCSD over the years, I'm thinking specifically about community safety plan. Oftentimes it's stated in these reports that OCSD works closely with and consults with the Oceano Advisory Council. So I think that that aspect of the relationship should be just put on the record. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes. And the next hand I have raised is Jeff Edwards.
Yes. Good evening again. This is Jeff Edwards, and I too participated in the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting of September 14th. And I'm certainly pleased to hear that your general manager is going to continue to work with the city and MKN on their water options. I think that's great to keep the ball rolling. Director Villa mentioned that Arroyo Grande has decided to reduce their subscription to 25%. What that does, that leaves 19% of CCB unsubscribed. And I think that could be a problem going down the road. So that's a problem. And I think that creates an opportunity for the OCSD. Moreover, that same day, and coincidentally, the County Planning Department had a pre-application meeting with the city of Pismo Beach. Because as I've reported to you before, it turns out that the Coastal Dunes RV Park and Campground is not properly zoned to accommodate the injection wells Pismo Beach wants to site there. So fortunately or unfortunately, Pismo Beach is going to be saddled with having to go through an LCP amendment, including an addendum or a supplement to their environmental impact report, which could take years, literally a couple of years, probably at least. So again, this represents an opportunity for Oceano to negotiate and work with AG on a water deal. We know that you can offer the water at half the price of CCB. All of the delivery infrastructure is in place. And Zone 3 contract amendments pending right now are likely going to make it easier to store water in Lopez for multiple years, including state water. So I think this, again, it's a great chance for Oceano to work with Pismo work with AG and hammer out a deal. My recommendation to you is that you agendize a discussion of how to place a matter on the ballot that would speak to the 2012 voter initiative in Oceano that requires a voter approval of any water sale. So I, again, encourage you to agendize that so you, your board can have that discussion, including the community. Now, as to the other reports, I'd like to ask, where might I find the written reports for your outside committees? Because as you know, to receive your stipend, you must have a written report for that committee participation. So maybe that can be answered. You know, the question came up about VACO and OAC and so forth, and the Oceano off-highway vehicle recreation area. It's been clear VACO's gone on the record as supporting the ODSVRA. So I think it's quite relevant for a discussion about the ODSVRA at OAC, and certainly VACO's taken a position on it. So I'll just close by saying that, again, I think it would be very good for you to agendize a matter that would be a prelude to having something on the ballot, so you will be in a position to make a long-term deal with the Rio Grande City as this water situation unfolds. Thank you.
Anyone else, Karen?
And with that, that was the last rant hand I had raised. Thank you.
All righty. Brings us to our consent agenda, the review and approval of minutes, the meeting September 8th, and the review of cash disbursements. Anybody have any questions or comments?
No.
No.
Okay. Make a motion.
Well, let's open for public comment.
Oh, I always forget.
It's okay. Public comment on the consent agenda, please.
And just to remind the public, please hit star 9 on the phone and hit the raise hand button on your computer or tablet to raise your hand. And with that, President Austin, I have no hands raised.
Okay, and then I'll bring it back. And if we're ready, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to pass the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, may we get a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director White?
God. Yes.
Vice President White. And Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
And President Austin?
Yes. Okay, that brings us now to item 8, our business items, which AA is consideration of a report of staffing issues with the Five Cities Fire Authority and direction to staff related to the 2022 special tax ballot measure. So I believe we'll turn this over to Mr. Clemens, or I think our fire chief is here for this item.
Yeah, I'll introduce the item and then we'll hear from the fire chief.
Okay.
Also, just want to bring to your attention that in my staff original staff report, there was a misstatement. It said that Measure A20 received over 67% in favor, and that's inaccurate. It received over 66%. So 1% off there. I apologize for that. But the reason I wanted to bring this to your board is, you know, the whole purpose of Measure A20 was to help fund the staffing of Oceano Fire Station as FCFA moved away from the reserve program to full-time firefighters. And the chief can explain better probably the reasons for that. But over time, you know, those reserve firefighters that were once a part of the program received full-time paying positions or left the program altogether. And so now we're down to one reserve firefighter, which is causing staffing issues that primarily affect the Oceano Station, but it does affect all three agencies because Basically, you're left with serving three communities with two engines. So the Five City Fire Authority Board met last week to discuss options, and Chief Lieberman can explain what was decided. So that's really the first part of this this item, is to receive an update on those staffing issues and what's been done to hopefully solidify it a little bit more than it was or currently is. The second part is, you know, the Third Amendment to the JPA requires the district to put a ballot measure on next year's primary ballot for a special tax. So we were hoping for a citizens initiative to come forward. That's looking, you know, iffy at currently. So regardless, our district is going to have to do something. So I wanted direction from your board tonight on, you know, one option is just to do the same thing we did last time, you know, $180 per parcel, and put the same ballot measure forward that went forward in, I don't know what that was, went forward in 2020, or if, you know, your board kind of decided that a benefit unit approach was a little too complex and administratively burdensome. However, there was brought forward an option possibly for a square footage based special tax, either square footage of parcels or square footage of improvements. And so I would look for direction from your board on whether you want me to do an analysis between those approaches. And we can talk about that kind of the second half of the presentation. But right now, I just want to kind of turn it over to Chief Lieberman to discuss the staffing issues that we're going through currently.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clemens. Good evening, President Austin, Board, Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. If I could, I'd like to share some information. I kind of opened our staff report at the board meeting Friday with just some background information that I think will help bring this issue forward in a more focused way. And just kind of going back historically to 2009, that's when the three communities got together and directed their managers to form what became the Five Cities Fire Authority in 2010. At that time, there was a funding formula that was determined. At that time, the communities contributed the people that they had on staff. They contributed their fire engines, their equipment, their breathing apparatus. Everything that they had was contributed to this consolidated fire department. It was done for a reason, right? So there would be perpetual cost savings to each community by not having to have the redundancy of fire chief, fire administration, all of those costs that would be duplicative in each of the three communities. Operationally, it was an increase in customer service to the communities because the closest available resource responded to that 911 call without worrying about what the sticker on the door said as far as which community. And then as we've progressed, we've gotten more efficient. We're now using GPS technology where a fire station location is definitely a landmark in a community, but it doesn't necessarily define where that resource is going to come from to help that person dialing 911. Dispatch literally geolocates the address where the 911 call is coming from, and then they use GPS to look at our apparatus to figure out where the nearest one is. And that's how we respond to the communities today. So going back to the history lesson, thank you. Since 2017, when the strategic plan was adopted by the member communities, investment has come to the fire authority, right? So everyone contributed their fire engines that they had, regardless how old they were. And we literally had to replace fire engines that were breaking down, going to code 3 medical calls. The community stepped up and did that. We needed to replace breathing apparatus that lasts about 15 years. The community stepped up and did that as well. in 2017, the then board of the Five Cities Fire Authority prioritized a portion of the adopted strategic plan focusing on shoring up the reserve firefighter program, which was studied, identified, analyzed, and compared to other like agencies, and it was struggling throughout the industry, mainly because the volunteer mentality had changed, where you had true community volunteers because they also held down another job. Another biggie was the training requirements for a firefighter are the same whether you're a part-time employee, a volunteer, or a full-time employee. So that's a lot to balance when you're working full-time doing something else. You want to help your community and you've got to take care of your family. Lastly, two more things. Compensation, as we became a part-time program, compensation became huge. And actually, it's still an issue today. And I'll give you an example in a moment. But I think the big issue is, you know, we talk about the silver tsunami. We've talked about the baby boomer generation hitting retirement age. And it's really, really progressed, but it's not over yet. And because the baby boomer generation took so much of the workforce as far as capacity, in essence, you held people back from moving up through the ranks of an organization, whether it was government or business. With the baby boomer generation leaving the workforce, there's now significant opportunity for full-time work as a firefighter. So full-time salary, full-time benefits in an agency with upward mobility. We noticed that back in 2017, and I can tell you today, between the cities of Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Maria, they're currently recruiting for 22 full-time positions. Just to touch on compensation of this program, someone told me that I should go look at a sign that was on the Arroyo Grande In-N-Out store. And I did. I went and looked, and the starting wage of In-N-Out Burger is $17 an hour with an earn up to number of $20.50. The high end of our part-time employees, a driver operator, reserve firefighter, is $17 an hour. So that's always been something that's plagued us. And one of the reasons we wanted to transition away from this part-time program, and the decision was made. So for the first 2 years, we transitioned to full-time staff in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And when it came time to transition to full-time staff in Oceano, kind of took a tactical pause because of funding. Oceano needed time to go to the community with Measure 820. If that had passed, we wouldn't be worrying about station closures because the passage of 820 was going to put three full-time bodies in the Oceano station. So as you know, with the recount, I believe it failed by 9 votes, which means an overwhelming majority of your voters did support the notion of the measure, but unfortunately there was a consequence by its failure. So station staffing. When Oceano joined the Five Cities Fire Authority, they contributed one full-time person, a fire captain, where the others had two. They had a fire captain and a fire engineer. So Oceano is staffed by one full-time employee every day of the week, and that part-time program, which has been, it's been on life support for lack of a better description. We currently have one part-time employee, and it's resulting in station closures. Every day at the Five Cities Fire Authority, there are three captains in total, two engineers and two firefighters working the stations. So 7 full-time people plus the incident commanders, the battalion chiefs. Those full-time positions are always filled. They're filled whether someone's sick, on approved vacation, if unfortunately they've hurt themselves and they're on a workers' comp leave, or if they're out of county, for example, on an incident, those positions are always going to be filled, those full-time positions. The big difference with the part-time positions is because that $17 an hour, a competitive work environment, and the fact that our reserves have more than one job, sometimes they're going to call and say, I know I'm scheduled to work tomorrow, but I can make more money working construction, and I have to do that to sustain myself. So that's kind of gotten us to where we are today with the reserve program being non-sustainable and the closures, with between the reserve program being broken and the failure of Measure 820. That is the nexus. I do want to talk, because there's been a lot of talk about how come fire authority personnel are going out of county to these big fires while the Oceano station is closed. So I want to go back to what I told you. Full-time positions will always be filled. They will never be downsized so we can send people out of county. Just like every other fire department with full-time employees, we have minimum daily staffing, which says here's what the numbers have to be. We also know that the focus of the fire department is to take care of our member communities before we can go support the statewide mutual aid program. And we have policies. We have, it's called drawdown. What's the maximum number of people that are either sick, on vacation, an open position, on workers' compensation? We take all of those folks from a baseline number, and that will tell us whether we have anyone available to leave the jurisdiction. So again, our primary focus is here before we leave. I will say the premise of mutual aid is really based on a premise that no single agency, even if you're talking about the Los Angeles County Fire Department, there's no single agency that has the resources to anticipate any kind of impact to their community. And so when an incident breaks, they will work this incident until they exhaust their resources, and then they're going to use the tested statewide mutual aid system to ask for help. And I can tell you, and it works locally. It's not just a statewide thing. I mean, if you think about the threats to the community of Oceano, you've got a railway with hazardous materials traveling on those rail cars, the threat of derailment. You've got an agricultural industry using very dangerous chemicals under safe conditions, but there's been a release in the past, and it could happen again. You think about the San Simeon earthquake and Oceano, subject to liquefaction and what it does to the infrastructure under the ground and to foundations of homes. And lastly, the tsunami and the inundation threat because of Oceano's, where it's placed in terms of the coastline here and the tsunami modeling. So there's threats here that if something happened, we hope they never do. We can't staff for those huge incidents and just in case it happens one day. We have to staff as best we can. And if we're confronted with one of those large incidents, we're going to ask for help through the mutual aid system, and others are going to come to help us. So again, I wanted to just kind of explain that, but really leave you with the fact that our priority are the member communities, and nobody leaves town until we've taken care of the member communities. So the board meeting on Friday, and I actually want to take a moment to recognize Mr. Clemens, because he had some really great out-of-the-box thinking when I met with the managers group. The board approved action on Friday that will create an additional fire engineer position. So a new position, which will be based at the Oceano Station, along with our reserve employee. And we're hoping to hang on to that person as long as we can. But what this will do is it will keep the Oceano Station open 2 out of 3 shifts every week. So for example, this is B shift, I believe, is one of the shifts that's impacting Oceano. That starts, what is today? Wednesday. By Friday, there will be bodies in the Oceano Station that are directly due to the board action Friday. So again, we're shoring up the station closures as best we can. We're not asking the communities for additional funds. We're using our fund balance or our reserves, which is a little uncomfortable. But again, the boards saw the priority in doing this. And this is what we're doing to help alleviate the position. So now 4 out of 6 days, those 48-hour shifts will be covered. And again, that fire engineer position is a full-time represented position. So if that employee is scheduled to take a day off to be with his or her family, someone's going to be working behind them. So the employee that I'm promoting might not be working until the 22nd of October, but beginning Friday, I will have employees working in the Oceano Station. So I'll take a pause there, see if there's questions, and then turn it back to Mr. Clemens.
Are there any questions so far for Chief Lieberman?
Yeah. Hi, Chief Lieberman. I had a question. Are you able to give a percentage breakdown of calls that Oceano receives? And I know that there's quite a few calls to Farrell Road, the convalescent home.
So let me see if I can answer your question, and then I'll tell you about 1212 Farrell.
Okay.
So looking at total incidents, and I believe you have the staff report in your agenda packet, but I'm looking at the total incidents for 2020. And of the total of 3,982 calls, Oceano had 677 calls for service. Okay. That doesn't mean that's the calls for service that were responded to from that station.
Right.
These are the number of calls that were within the Oceano district limits. So the efficiencies with the Five Cities Fire Authority, like I shared at the beginning, was the closest available unit goes to the call, regardless of where it's coming from. So you could add another 500 to 600 calls coming out of the Oceano station on a typical year that are serving Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande. So there's definitely, it goes back to the nexus that this is a, this plan works. 1212 Farrell, the Arroyo Grande Care Center, as you can imagine, places, skilled nursing facilities in any community are folks that have high needs for medical care. And it can impact your fire department, and it has impacted our fire department in the past. I will tell you that when COVID came, I asked the county EMS agency for approval to really reduce the amount of response that Five Cities Fire went to that facility so the ambulance would go. And if they truly needed some extra hands, if it was a truly a medical emergency, then we would be requested. I think prior to that change, which did drop off our call volume quite a bit, I would say, based off the top of my head, I think we're talking about 145 calls a year to 1212 Farrell in Arroyo Grande. Did that answer your question or give you the information?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's important to point out what affects us affects Arroyo Grande and Grover. So, you know, we need to pass a measure to for the fire authority.
Thank you, Sherry. Anyone else have any questions for Chief Lieberman? Okay, do you want to continue, Chief?
I'm looking to Mr. Clemens to take the baton. Mr.
Clemens, do you want to chime in here?
Yeah, so I think, thank you, Chief Lieberman. That was the intention of this part of the item, was to give an update on the staffing issues and what was done to hopefully shore it up in the short term, ultimately to get full-time coverage 24/7. It's going to take more money, and that's kind of leads us into the second part of the item, is the special tax measure for next year. If your board, if it's a district sponsored measure, I'm looking for direction from you on whether you want to just do the same thing we did, which is $180 per parcel. It was a flat per parcel, or do you want me to do some analysis for a square footage and give you a comparison on different approaches. And I approached a special tax consultant, NBS. They currently assist the South County Sanitation District, South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and do the tax roll collections for Oceano. But this is right up their alley. They said they could do that analysis for $7,500, which is within my spending authority, but I didn't want to spend that without getting direction from your board. So that's really what I'm looking for is direction from your board. So with that, I'm open for any questions, or if you want to open it to the public, it's up to you.
Well, why don't we do public comment first? So if we can go ahead and open up to public comment right now.
Yes, and just to remind the public, please hit *9 if you're on the phone, or if you're on your computer or tablet, please hit the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen. And I have two hands raised, and I'm going to unmute Charles Varney.
Thank you, Carrie. For the chief, I have a couple of questions. One is, and I'll get them both out, and then I appreciate your answer. I haven't heard any consideration, nor did I read any consideration about raising the hourly wage of reserve firefighters to like something like $30 an hour. And I wondered what that cost would compare to hiring full-time staff. And then I've always wondered about the situation of sending ambulances and fire trucks to every medical emergency, and the 1212 feral solution, where you got stipulation that you would not go to these medical emergencies unless specifically called for and would let ambulances handle them. Wouldn't that be a great cost savings across the entire five cities fire district to lighten up on these medical calls and stick to fires and jaws of life and that type of stuff? So I'll give you an opportunity to answer that. And then I'd like to make a comment on the proposed tax. Thank you.
Well, why don't you go ahead and make your comments and then he'll answer.
Okay. So I'm definitely in favor of square footage rate. And I think that's much more fair. I think a lot more people would support that. I'd know many people who thought $180 across the board was very regressive, impacted poor people much more than obviously a 20 unit apartment owner that pays $180 and somebody that owns a little house in Oceano pays $180. So I think square footage is fair. And I just wondered, Mr. Clemens, if the money that you may be proposing to spend on an analysis, is that to see whether square footage or the flat rate 180 would gather more or less money? Or can we just move forward with a flat rate or a square footage rate? Thank you.
Thank you. So Chief Lieberman, did you want to answer the questions about the first two questions?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Barney. So let's talk about the hourly wage first. We did address the hourly wage, excuse me, back in 2017 by raising it to a comparable rate. I think that there's contributing factors. So yes, we could raise that part-time rate to $30 an hour. I'd be interested to see what a full-time employee, the entry-level firefighter position makes per hour. And I know there's benefit costs and other costs. There's about $12,000 in cost involved in onboarding, whether it's a full-time employee or a part-time employee. That's a pre-employment physical. That's fitting them for all their personal protective gear. So we're going to make that $12,000 investment. And it's not as simple as it used to be. Like when I was a volunteer years ago, they would hold up a set of bunker pants, the firefighting equipment, and say, yeah, this looks like it should fit you. The rules and regulations and OSHA laws have changed. And so now individuals need to be fitted for that equipment to appropriately protect them. Again, we're looking at about $12,000 to onboard someone. Then we're going to spend money training this person. Again, I mentioned this in my staff report, with no guarantee that they're not testing for a full-time job. So just to use Pismo Beach as an example, they had a consultant study that actually resulted in them eliminating this part-time program because the career firefighters that should be focused on training for high-risk, low-frequency type incidents were not given the time to do that because they were constantly training on the basics with these entry-level folks. And I will tell you that we want a competitive recruitment for these reserve folks, and we're looking for folks that are testing elsewhere. We want motivated, well-trained, intelligent people because this is a serious job. So yes, we could look at increasing that hourly rate given the current situation we're in with the MOAs. Don't have the funding to do that. But again, I don't have the number in front of me of what a starting hourly rate is for a full-time employee. So I just wanted to give you some additional background on the reserves versus hourly rates. And then secondly, just to talk about ambulances for a moment, it's a great question. And I think that the deciding factor and the biggest issue is there's a very finite of number of ambulances in the county. When I was the EMS agency director, I had a much better handle on how many ambulances are in the county on any given day, because it's flexed a little bit. There's what are called day cars, where the private contract provider will add additional ambulances for the busier times of day, and then they'll contract that when it's not as busy. But I will say, including Cambria, I'm going to estimate that there's 13 ambulances serving the entire county of San Luis Obispo. And when I was the EMS director, there were 27,000 calls for service throughout our county. And I know that number has only gone up over time. So the point of sharing that information is that we never know where that ambulance is coming from. There is no guarantee that the ambulance is going to be as close as the fire company. So our folks need to respond to that emergency. They need to initiate patient care and then transfer care if that person needs to be transported. The difference between Arroyo Grande Care Center is those folks have the staff, I believe, at a minimum. They're LVN trained and certified with a registered nurse that's supposed to be on duty 24 hours a day. So there's an algorithm that these skilled nursing facilities need to follow in order to request an ambulance-only transport. And I just don't think we could do that across the board. I will say that your question gave me an opportunity to share some additional information about the days that one shift when Oceano won't be covered is we're going to run a new response model called a task force response out of the Arroyo Grande station, which because we'll have that captain that's budgeted to be in Oceano, we'll be having four people respond. We'll be having two pieces of apparatus go to every call just in case, you know, we can handle three calls at a time with Five Cities Fire. But if we get that fourth call for service and perhaps it's cardiac arrest, the task force has the flexibility to split people off to start some initial patient treatment. Or if it's a structure fire, they can do some initial work until the remainder of that task force catches up to them. I hope that provides you some additional perspective, Mr. Varney.
Okay, thank you. And then, no, Mr. Clemens, did you want to answer about the tax question?
Yeah, so the analysis wouldn't be intended to see if we could generate more money through a square footage, but the question would be, what would the square footage rate have to be to bring in the same amount of revenue as the 180 per parcel, so that you can do a comparison one to the other, along with some pros and cons of each approach, how easy it is it to administer that data each year, how easy is it to get, is it very accurate from the assessor's office, etc. So okay. that would be the analysis.
Thank you. I'm sorry, we should have, is there any other public comment?
Yes, I have one more hand raised, and I am going to unmute Jeff Edwards.
Yes, good evening again, board. My name is Jeff Edwards, and you may recall earlier, I suggested to your board that you have a discussion with the community regarding water sales and put that on the ballot. You might ask, well, what's the connection between water sales and a fire tax? Well, and when a word, it's affordability. Fire tax is one more utility cost in effect. And as you know, you have considerable water infrastructure needs in your community, very expensive needs. And any sale of water and the proceeds, they must go into your water fund. Well, those proceeds can significantly defray those water infrastructure improvements. And so if you want your ratepayers, your citizens, to support the fire tax, let them know that the water infrastructure improvements that you have planned are covered, and it's not going to go, they're not going to see those increases go into a water rate upgrade. It, again, it's about affordability. So my recommendation is put your fire tax on the same June 2022 ballot as a water sale authorization. Pair those two up if you want your fire tax to succeed. As to the taxation methodology, I would encourage you to look at a taxation based on the number of units on a given parcel.
whether it be commercial or residential. There may be some minor exceptions, but generally, I think you'll find that, say, in mobile home parks, how many units do they have? You charge based on the number of units. If you have a fourplex, you're charging based on number of units. A commercial property, number of units. So fundamentally, the takeaway and my message to you, again, is pair up the fire tax and the water sales authorization on the same ballot, separate measures, put them on the same ballot. So again, your ratepayers have a sense that it's going to be affordable for them, and you'll be able to realize infrastructure improvements for your water, and you'll also be able to afford your fire tax. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else, Perry?
That was the last hand I had raised. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Then I'll bring it back. And
I'm sorry. I missed one hand.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So the next hand I'm going, or yeah, the next commenter I'm going to unmute is Sean McMahon.
Sorry. Good evening, guys. This is Sean McMahon. I'm the president of Five Cities Firefighters Local 4403. I just wanted to comment a little bit about the extra staffing. We're excited about it. Although this is a way to shore the system up, it is not a fix. So I just urge the council to keep moving forward with getting appropriate staffing levels at the station. The one thing I had to answer the gentleman's question, I believe a starting firefighter makes about $20 an hour. That's our full-time firefighter, and it goes up per position from engineer and then captain. But yeah, I just want to just urge you guys to keep supporting it and move forward with it, and we can hopefully not have as many of these brownouts, because it does not just affect Oceano, it affects the rest of the cities and the crews as well. So yeah, that's all I have. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, so we'll bring it back, and I think we should address Mr. Clemens had the question if we wanted to look at the the study, or you know what I'm saying,
study.
I had some comments and questions.
Okay, go ahead, Shirley.
In discussing the square footage, from what I've looked at, it seems like about 70% of fire taxes, etc., use the flat rate. And the square footage method, from what I've read, is used mostly in urban areas that have a lot of box stores, manufacturing plants, that kind of thing. And if we look at Oceano, we only have our big buildings are really along Highway 1, the Melodrama and Povey, and some closer to the beach. But I mean, my guess is that Oceano is probably, 90% residential. And then I think what we also would need to look at, and maybe Mr. Clemens can answer at the end, is what would be the staff cost for setting up the square footage issue? In other words, how much time would it take to create the individual bills for each property, because each property is going to be different. There won't be duplications. So each and every property needs that much attention. And then along with that, what's the timeline if someone disagrees with, the bill that they receive? What's that process? How much time do they have to challenge it? And then, how is the challenge dealt with? Is it denied or approved? And then what happens next after that? Does the property owner have any recourse? Other than those questions, I think the other problem might be is in Oceano, as is Halcyon, there are many properties with multiple dwellings. And when we bought ours, we had a house and then four little, I think they used to be beach cabins that were dragged over here from the beach. And so are those going to be counted in square footage? If no one's living in them, does it matter? I mean, you know, and then what state of, what's their state of existence? And are garages counted? I think there's all kinds of issues. And then the other one could be that, you know, someone has a nice new house, but it's small. And the next door neighbor has, you know, two houses and then an apartment. Well, they're probably going to owe more. And, you know, are they going to think that's fair that someone has a new house and yet they're going to pay more? So I think there could be all kinds of issue with people comparing their bills to other people. And then, in the end, if people are unhappy with that, then how would we pass, you know, the fire tax? So I guess if you could fill in the timeline issue, because it seems to me if we're going to do the square footage, we would almost have to start now to get the information from the assessor and then process that into individual bills and, you know, and then include the staff time and costs and, you know, the process. Okay. So if you could answer those for me, that would help.
Okay. Mr. Kerman.
Yes. So we have to notify the clerk, county elections official by January 28th of what we want to put on the ballot. So I believe we have a meeting on the 26th, which is 2 days before that, where we would have to adopt the final, that would be the drop dead date for adopting the final resolution of what you want to put on the ballot. So that process would, we'd probably introduce it at the first meeting in January. So January is when we need to make the decision. So yes, if you want to do this analysis, we'd have to start right away. As I mentioned, it's the consultant thinks they can get it done, you know, fairly quickly here in October. And, you know, we could bring it back in November, December for a discussion on a comparison between the two approaches. And then whatever your board chooses, we could then introduce in January and adopt to put on the ballot. So I think that's our time frame that we're discussing. You raise a lot of good questions on if we were to go with the square footage approach. There are some certain administrative challenges, but that process would be an annual process through the tax roll, just like we do with our delinquent water and sewer bills. We notify the individuals what their charge is. That gives them the opportunity to dispute it. And then, you know, if we find that there was an error, that can be changed before it goes on the tax roll. So it's something that's done all the time. But certainly if it's not a flat parcel tax, there is going to be a lot more of those issues that arise on an annual basis.
I think that's what we covered last time when there was a big discussion on the square footage or the flat.
Well, rate. And to follow up, Mr. Clemens, so there would be an annual review or whatever every year. I'm sorry, I already said annual, but and really the customer is going to pay for that, whereas a flat tax, there's no annual review, correct?
Ultimately, the process is the same for putting it on the tax roll, but it's much more straightforward if it's the flat parcel tax. So you're not going to have people, as many people, saying that they shouldn't be charged a certain amount.
Right. Okay.
Because that's definitely what will happen is, well, how come you paying that when I'm this, you know, and it will go on and we'll be dealing with nothing but complaints and.
I'd like to say something.
Go ahead, Director.
I think we owe it to the people who didn't support it last time and the people who did support it last time to give at least a simplistic look at the square foot, not weight it where a restaurant would have a heavier weight than a single house, but just a straight square foot. Because in that way, everybody also, just like it was $180 or say I have 1,000 square foot house and the money could be the same $180, but it would be 20 cents a square foot. I didn't do the math. And I think we owe it to everybody to at least make a quick run at this and see what we can come up with. At the same time, I haven't given up. I was originally told that as a member of this board, I could not participate in a citizens initiative for fire tax. I have since been told by Manager Clements that I can until it goes on the ballot. So I'm gonna try to go ahead and see if we can get a citizens committee together in the meantime. So, but I think if we
can, that's a good positive possibility.
So if we could get this, if I could work on a citizens committee or people would let me do that as the fire person for this board. At the same time, we look at the ballot ways of balancing the costs some way or another way, at least give them honest choices. And then, you know, we're up against the deadline. No argument about that. And then in December, we can make our decision. So that's what I'd like to see happen, but that's just me.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, so what do we want to go ahead and give direction to investigate the square footage? Do the consultant? What's the consensus of the board to do that? To have Mr. Clements do
maybe
that?
Director White should make a motion.
Could I just make one comment first?
Sure.
Just to refresh everybody's memories, it's really not that complex of a calculation. I had contacted the county and found out that it would take a couple of days for them to spit the data out of their computer system for the square footage of each parcel and the square footage of each improvement on the parcels. And then it's just a simple matter of adding up the square footage, you know, factoring in how much money we need, figuring out what the rate would be, and then looking at each parcel and calculating based on that square footage and that rate, what's their tax rate. So it's something that could actually be done in Excel if you just wanted to do something quick and dirty. It's not that complicated. And if anybody has, if someone has an issue with their rate, once that's been calculated, what they really have an issue with is the assessor's office saying how many square feet of improvements they have on their parcel. So it's something that they would need to deal with the assessor's office and get the square footage corrected with them. It's not really something that I would see the OCSD needing to deal with because our calculation would be pretty straightforward once we know what the rate would be.
This is Director Villa, and I also agree with Karen and Director White and Director Rupolgo. I think we owe it to the public. I really would like for us to stay in the Five Cities Fire Authority. I've had their service at my house on various occasions, and they come a lot sooner. I mean, seconds are a matter of life and death, and it's just so stressful and when you have an emergency that's life and death for a family member, they seem to get here quickly, a lot faster than ambulances. And I'm all for community and the Five Cities, the fire authority, us staying part of it. And I remember
several people saying that they didn't think the flat tax was fair, and that's why they're going to vote for it. Let's remember that also here in Oceano, there's a lot of low-income individuals, and there's a lot of individuals are just making ends meet. So for them to see that we at least compared the two and made, you know, them understand that for them to choose which one they believe is fair, I think that would be something that would let them vote in our favor so we can stay part of the Five Cities Fire Authority.
I don't think we can let them have the choice, but we can determine for them which for the most people, it may not be any cheaper for most people. And there are some people that it's going to have one hell of an impact on. Yeah. I'm not going to say where, but there is places where there's going to be a lot of impact to property owners. So we're changing the dynamics, and some people who got off scot-free last time at a different system are going to pay more. And I don't know if the people in the middle are going to pay, but I think I would pay about the same. So that's where I am.
And the people that would benefit more with the flat tax were really the low income people. So
yeah.
Maybe that's not going to be the same case with a square footage.
That was
they will be able to.
Well, then we'll do the analysis right, and then we can decide we want to go square footage or the other.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what impacts the most people more.
Okay. Well, I think but we're just supposed to give direction, right? Or we vote on this.
No, just it seems like the board consensus is to move forward with a comparison between the two approaches. And that's my intention.
Okay.
All we get that done.
Yeah, the board all agree?
What was that?
Agree?
Yeah.
I just said, can we get it done as quickly as possible?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Chief Lieberman, for that report. I appreciate all the information. I think it helped fill a lot of questions that people needed answered about the staffing and the big question of why are we sending people out of town when we're not staffed. So I think you explained that very well. So thank you very much.
Madam President, can I throw in a little commercial?
Yeah.
Anybody interested in participating in Oceana Citizens for Fire Safety could leave a message for me at the district office. Anybody wants to become a citizen to help ensure that we keep our fire department, be happy to have volunteers.
Wonderful. Okay. Leave a message for Karen White at the district office if you're interested in citizens.
Oceana Citizens for Fire Safety.
Go ahead, say it again, Karen.
Oceana Citizens for Fire Safety.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Unless
can I ask you a favor? Would you like to preside the meeting now? Would you like to take over the meeting now, please?
Yes.
I'm not feeling that well. So
okay. Yes.
Say goodnight to everyone.
I get well.
Good night.
Leave the meeting. Good night.
Moving on to item 8B. Adopt a resolution authorizing remote telecommunications meetings, discuss board meeting protocol, and provide staff direction as needed.
Yes.
COVID may never end.
Thank you. So I think at the last meeting, there was some question on what would happen when the governor's executive order regarding the suspension of some Brown Act rules expired at the end of September. CSDA sponsored a bill, AB 361, which was just signed by the governor last Thursday, and they sent out an implementation guide on Friday. So what it does is it allows agencies to continue to meet remotely during an emergency, a declared emergency from the state, which we are still in a declared emergency due to COVID. But you do have to adopt a resolution to do your meetings remotely under AB 361 rules. And then it's only good for 30 days and you have to readopt another resolution every 30 days during the emergency. So what I presented to your board is that the initial resolution that's required if your board chooses to continue to meet remotely, it would cover us through October. And then my plan would be to, each month have a similar board item on consent for your approval if you want to continue to meet remotely during the COVID pandemic. There is still a danger to the public from the Delta variant, certainly breakthrough cases. So it would be my recommendation that we continue to meet remotely. But again, ultimately, that's up to your board. And then the other part of this item would be when we ever do go back to in-person meetings, is there any direction you want to give? I think that would probably depend on where we are in the emergency, whether it's completely eradicated or not. So I don't know if we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but certainly I'm open for questions and discussion on this item.
I think that we continue remotely and then see what happens down the road. It's hard to predict. I thought we'd be having, in-person meetings next month, but not the case, so.
I think it is premature to talk about what conditions we might want to have in place when we go back to in-person meetings. And we should wait until we're closer to the point of doing that.
We want to just then approve this resolution for the next month, go month by month on it.
You might want to take public comment before you do that.
I know. I was just thinking, yeah, public comment, please.
Yes, and just to remind the public, if you're on your phone, please hit *9. If you're on your computer or tablet, please hit the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen. And with that, Vice President White, I have no hands raised.
Okay. Do we want more discussion or just entertain a motion?
I'll move that we adopt a resolution authorizing remote teleconference meetings.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Oplogle?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And Vice President White?
Yes. Okay, we have no hearing items. And do we have written communications?
We just had what was provided as an addendum earlier today.
Okay. Future agenda items. I guess COVID telecommunicating needs to be put on every month by the looks of it.
Yeah, I don't think we need to add that to the list because we'll just do that as a matter of routine.
Well, then is there anything else to come before this board? Okay, do we have no closed session? Entertain a motion for adjournment, I guess.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. Gee, that was a short term. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Night.
You can.
Bye.